Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk about 40 years of Aware. We'll get the details about Thursday's screening of the film, The Weekend Sailor. Carolyn Malseed and Michael Rowcroft will tell us about the Financial Peace University. We'll get an update on all things Canvas. And Michaela Moore will be here to highlight the upcoming JDHS production of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 40 degrees with light rain at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonio Gonzalez. President Donald Trump is moving ahead with the Dakota Access Oil Pipeline and the previously rejected Keystone XL Pipeline. He signed executive orders Tuesday morning advancing both projects, fulfilling a campaign promise to promote U.S. oil development. The action comes a day after White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer indicated what is in store during his first official press briefing Monday. Responding to a question about the pipelines, Spicer said Keystone and Dakota Access are part of the administration's vision for future development.
Areas like Dakota and the Keystone Pipeline, areas that we can increase jobs, increase economic growth, and tap into America's energy supply more. That's something that he has been very clear about. I think he talked about it not only on the campaign, but around the Thanksgiving period. He was talking about that being a big priority. That's one of those ones where I think that the energy sector and our natural resources are an area where I think the president is very, very keen on making sure that we maximize our use of natural resources to America's benefit.
In the waning weeks of the Obama administration, the Army Corps of Engineers rejected a permit for the Dakota Access Line under Lake Oahe on the Missouri River near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. The administration also denied the Keystone XL Pipeline in 2015. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is formally asking for any remaining protesters to leave. The Tribal Council voted on a resolution Friday giving people at the Osheti-Shekoing camp until the end of this month to leave. Tribal officials say they intend to continue fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline in the courts. A few hundred pipeline opponents remain at the camps, down from as many as 10,000 last fall. Crews are cleaning up a 200,000-liter oil spill from a pipeline on First Nations land in Saskatchewan, Canada. Officials are working to determine which of several pipelines in the area is the source of the leak. The CBC reports the spill covered agricultural land but didn't enter any water. The spill comes just days after an environmental coalition called for an independent investigation into the province's previous oil spill last summer, the 225,000-liter Husky Energy Pipeline leak that entered the North Saskatchewan River. Activist Emil Bell from the Canoe Lake Cree Nation in Saskatchewan told CTV that it's a conflict of interest for the government and Husky Energy to investigate, since both entities are responsible for preventing the spill. Bell's hunger strike in August prompted the formation of the Environmental Coalition. The incoming Trump administration stance on Native American issues remains mostly a mystery so far. That's from Oklahoma U.S. Representative Tom Cole. Speaking on Native America Calling Monday, Cole, a Republican and a member of the Chickasaw Nation, praised President Barack Obama's understanding of issues important to tribes. He says educating elected officials new to office on unique Native American ideals is an ongoing responsibility.
You know, one of the things that I think we have to do, and I think tribes have done a really good job of this over the last 10 or 15 years, is really educate, successive administrations, educate your members, tribal involvement, literally going to see your congressman, making sure the congressman comes to your community or United States senator, is much better now than it was when I was elected in 2002, and it's made a big difference.
Cole calls the recent listening session in Washington, D.C., headed by fellow Republican Representative Mark Wayne Mullen and attended by more than 200 tribal leaders, a good sign. A Senate committee postponed a vote on the nomination of Montana Republican Ryan Zinke to head the U.S. Department of Interior. The leadership of the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee didn't give a reason for the delay, but a post on the committee's website says the vote is off until further notice. Zinke faced relatively little opposition during his nomination hearing so far. The committee also postponed a vote on the nomination of Rick Perry to head the Department of Energy. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Touring Department welcomes the Gathering of Nations to Expo New Mexico, April 28th and 29th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at siabq.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, and in the studio now is Sarah Lynn Tabachnik. She's the ED of AWARE, and we're here to talk about their 40-year celebration this Saturday. Welcome to the show, Sarah Lynn.
Thank you so much, Scott.
It's nice to have you. So, in case somebody doesn't know, tell us about what AWARE is and how it came to be.
Okay, well, AWARE stands for Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies. And how it came to be, well, we go back 40 years, right? And there had been a series, as I understand it, there had been a series of sexual assaults of women being raped in Juneau, and a coalition formed called the Juneau Coalition on Assaults Against Women. And it was women volunteering who would answer the phones in their homes from women calling in crisis. And what they found is that most women who called were calling because of violence by their intimate partners. So what we now call domestic violence. And the following year, JCAW, Juneau Coalition on Assaults Against Women, incorporated into AWARE, just changed the name, and services became bigger over time. Funding became bigger. The state became a funder, and things really got moving.
Okay, and you've been with the organization for 30 years?
This is my 30th year.
Wow.
I know.
So from those early years of just taking phone calls, tell us now what AWARE does for the community.
We've got an emergency safe shelter. We've got crisis intervention services. Someone can call any hour of the day or night, and someone will answer. A trained advocate will be there. Our services are free and confidential. We've got a whole host of intervention services, legal intervention, medical accompaniment. We've also got now, as we move through time, a legal designated legal advocacy. We've got a huge prevention program, which I say huge because it encompasses the whole community. You know, for a long time, AWARE tried, and I think did pretty well in providing services. And the more partners that we gathered, the more people and agencies coming together, of course, the greater impact we can have. So we oversee the Juneau Violence Prevention Coalition and do a number of programs like, for example, Girls on the Run. I think it's the most well-known to help prevent violence. Because, you know, Scott, this is 100% preventable.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why not?
Yeah. And everything that you just mentioned, by going to this event on Saturday night, you will be supporting all of these programs.
That's right.
And some Susu and the Prophets will be playing?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
Talk about fun.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know Joy Neihart, but Joy Neihart is having a birthday, and she wants to celebrate with a dance party. But she wants to share the celebration with a nonprofit who is AWARE, and so she's sponsoring this event, our birthday, kind of shared with hers, and we're real grateful, of course, to her for that.
Okay. What time does the event start on Saturday?
It starts at 8 p.m. The band starts at 8 p.m. They'll be playing from 8 till midnight.
Okay. And you and I had been talking earlier, the K2 Seafood Fest is that night.
Right.
So I'm going to be, you know, a little self-promo here. Go out and get a nice stomach full of delicious seafood and then head up on and dance all night to Susu and the Prophets.
Right. Isn't that great? And then also, because it's a birthday party, we've got some birthday things, right? Like cupcakes that Bee's Bakery is providing. Chef Seth is providing some sweets. Copa is providing ice cream. So, you know, the usual cake and ice cream. We're also grateful to Alaskan Brewery, Event Alaska, and Marms and Meeks for graphic design in the Rockwell Ballroom, all who are contributing to help make this a success and a fundraiser for Aware.
Okay. Where should people get tickets?
They can get tickets at the door or at the Jack Hearts or Hearthside Books.
Okay. And for more information, the Aware website, Facebook?
Sure. Yeah, Facebook, there's an event, of course, and, yeah, they can contact Aware for sure.
Okay, Sarah Lynn, is there anything we're missing? Anything else you want to add?
Oh, you did such a good job. Maybe I'll just tell people our phone number in case really, you know, you or someone you know would like to call about anything. Our number is 907-586-1090.
All right, Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, the ED of Aware. This Saturday night, they're celebrating 40 years. And there'll be that celebration will be helped with Susu and the Prophets and lots of others. It's at the Rockwell Ballroom downtown, sort of close to, I don't know, how do you explain it? There's Hearthside Books there on the corner. It's just up from Hearthside Books on the right. On the way to the Baranoff Hotel, sort of right in there, right?
Yeah.
All right, Sarah Lynn, thanks again for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Another day, Lord, it's Alaska is still facing a yawning multi-billion dollar budget gap between what it spends and what it raises in revenue, despite billions in budget cuts and 2 years of policymakers debating how to keep the state solvent. Join us Wednesday at KTOO for Forum at 360 as Professor Emeritus Gunnar Knapp of the Institute of Social and Economic Research and Cliff Groh of Alaska Common Ground return to discuss Alaska's fiscal crisis. Doors open at 4:45 p.m. Wednesday, and the one-hour show begins at 5 p.m. at this week's Forum at 360.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 24th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 16 minutes after the hour. And joining me in the studio now is James Bibb. He is the Commodore of Seas, or Southeast Alaska Sailing Club. Welcome to the show, James.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. And also Denise Wiltsey, she's an at-large board member. Welcome to the show, Denise.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're here to talk about Thursday's screening at the Goldtown Nick of The Weekend Sailor. It seems like a really interesting film. Let's get to that in a minute, but let's start with you, James. Tell us exactly what Seas is.
Well, Seas is our local, Juneau's local sailing club, and it's about 30, 40 members and about 12 boats that are active every summer. And what's nice about this time of year is we get ready for the summer and the springtime sailing by offering a lot of wintertime activities to get the group together and to get interest and to keep the group moving along for get ready for the summer season.
Okay. And part of that is watching The Weekend Sailor on Thursday. Denise, how did you choose this film?
It was myself and one of my crew members who brought it to my attention. And once I saw the preview for the film, I mean, just the wealth of emotion and just excitement for this film that came over me. I felt like I had to bring it to town for the club members, but also for other people who might be interested in sailing within the community.
Yeah, and the film, it sort of chronicles a really important race. Was it in 1973? Is that right?
Correct.
Yeah, can you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Yeah, so the Round the World Whitbread Race, which is now called the Volvo Ocean Race. It was founded in 1973, and so this is the first ever race that was done. And the documentary itself focuses on the boat, the Sayula II, which is kind of this underdog boat. It's a Mexican yacht, they, against all odds, really just come out above the other participants. And so it tells about their story on this race.
Yeah, James, have you had a chance to see it yet?
No, I'm very excited. I've seen snippets and heard the story for many years, and so I'm anxious to look to watch it this Thursday.
Yeah, I saw the preview myself, and it's lots of great interviews with the crew, and they were the underdogs, and England was supposed to win, and then here comes this ragtag group from.
Yeah. All
Cinderella
over story.
And, yeah, right? Mm-hmm. That looks like a lot of fun. Looks like a well-done documentary. Tell us about the narrator.
The narrator, Simon...
Lebon, right?
Lebon,
is
that it? One of the singers from Duran Duran. but he's also a professional yachtsman.
Interesting. And also, like some great documentaries that Colette helps screen there at the Goldtown Nick, I understand you're going to have a Q&A with director Bernardo Arsua. You got it?
Arsuaga?
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, we'll have a Skype session set up for after the film to speak directly with him and ask any questions about his process in the film and also just getting to know the other members on this boat and that were involved with the race.
You're both sailors. What does it mean to sail around the world like these racers do in this film?
Well, I don't know. The farthest race I've done is around Admiralty, which in itself is, you know, that's a pretty good stretch. That's a whole week. I can't imagine going around the world. Mm-hmm. But you can't help, I think, but to wonder what if and what it must be like. You know, we have our heroes in the sailing community as well, and those large races are really something else.
Speaking of the race around Admiralty, I've heard of that. Tell us a few more of the events that Seas does and the programs. That you do youth sailing classes and stuff as well, right?
Well, not specifically. There's a separate youth sailing club in town that works on the – you see them in the channel in the summers doing their schools. You go out there and watch the boats flip over and come back up, and a lot of fun. But we usually we try to pick up where that sort of maybe ends and try to get especially people in town that have sailboats and want to be active. And it's a really interesting club because it's not necessarily racing. It's much more of a club that likes to get together and be on the water. And so we see it as much a recreation, and we can get out and meet people activity.
What would, and this goes out to either of you, what are some of the unique challenges of sailing on the inside waters? Is that where most people out of Juneau sail, or do they head out into the Gulf? Or?
Yeah, well, I want Denise to talk about this as well. Well, inside is very specific. We have great winds, and we have no wind. I mean, it's a challenge of tight, restricted channels, variable winds, lots of tide. But I do think that that offers a lot of adventure. There's a lot of unpredictability built into every race. So you're not necessarily the fastest boat that wins. You're the one that makes the best decisions, or we like to think of it as luck. You know, you might be able to catch the wind or the tide in the right manner. But we do have a lot of great harbors and beaches. We usually, a few races we go and we spend the night, have a great beach party. And then it's just a lot of fun.
I bet. Denise, how about you? What draws you to sailing?
Just like you said, I mean, there's just so much unpredictability out there on the water.
Yeah.
With the current, the tides, the air, or the winds, it can be pretty fluky out there and frustrating at times. But at the end of the day, when everyone gets together on the beach or at the harbors, I mean, it's just that camaraderie is just why we're out there.
Okay. So to see some of this camaraderie and this film, The Weekend Sailor, it's at the Goldtown Nick. This Thursday night, remind me what time?
6 p.m.
6 p.m. And is there a suggested donation?
A suggested donation of $15, and that will cover the film itself and the rental space.
Okay, sounds like fun. Anything else either of you would like to add?
Well, we have a website, seasailing.us, and it lists all of our activities starting this Thursday. Every month we have a sailor's talk up until May when we start racing. So please come out and join us.
Great. Thank you both so much. James Bibb, he's the Commodore, and Denise Wiltsey, she's an at-large board member for Seas or Southeast Alaska Sailing Club. They'll be having a film showing this Thursday at the Goldtown Nick at 6 p.m. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Part of gold, but we'll try best that we can. thought I was fine, but I was surprised to hear I had high blood pressure. Now I've got it under control.
I still feel young, so I didn't think I needed cancer screenings. I'm just glad we caught it early.
I feel great, but my doctor said my blood sugar put me at risk for diabetes. Now I'm watching what I eat and getting regular exercise.
You can look fine and feel fine and still have health issues that need attention. Make an appointment for a yearly checkup.
This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 24th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and joining me now in the studio is Carolyn Malseed. She is the priest at St. Brendan's Episcopal Church. Welcome to the show, Carolyn.
Thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. And Michael Rocroft, he is a member at St. Brendan's of the congregation. Thank you for coming on the show, Michael.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay, so we're here to talk about the Financial Peace University. Have you done this in town before, Carolyn?
Yes, we've done it twice before.
Okay. And what's it all about?
Financial Peace University is a program for individuals who need to learn financial management skills, particularly those who might be in debt and are trying to get out of debt and stay out of debt, to avoid financial crises, to avoid those panic moments. So it's a very helpful skill-building course, and also there are specific goals and strategies that are involved.
Okay. And, Michael, you've taken the class yourself, right?
That's right, yes. I was really fortunate. Barb Learmont is a great presenter. She presents Dave Ramsey's DVDs and facilitates the discussion in the class, and I really enjoyed her class. Yeah.
Okay, and so this will be out at St. Brendan's Church, which we talked about. It's out on Mendenhall Boulevard, is that right?
Correct.
Okay, and it starts on February 7th?
That's correct.
Okay, and describe sort of the scene and what the classes will be like for us.
Well, it's a 9-week program. It'll go from February 7th to April 4th, from 7 to 8:30. And the class consists of first watching a DVD, and then from that presentation, you then turn to the book and the booklet workbook and begin to work out your own strategies for how you can implement what he is teaching. There's a lot of sharing. Many people are embarrassed or ashamed about their financial situation, but after they've talked to each other for 1 or 2 weeks, that shame really disappears, and it becomes a very comforting thing to have people there with you who are experiencing the same things and learning new skills.
Okay. Michael, what were a few things you gleaned from your time in the class?
One of the things he said that really struck me was that financial peace is really about 80% behavior and doing the things like stop using your credit cards to the max. And the other 20% is knowledge. And the class gives you a balance of both, because you're able to apply some of the teachings that he's doing right there in the workbook and to your own finances immediately, and you begin to see the changes. And he has a wonderful plan where he kind of rolls into, as you pay one credit card debt or any debt off, you take that payment and you add it to another bill that you have in addition to your regular monthly payment. And it has this snowballing effect. And it was really amazing, because it sounds really great in theory until you actually apply it. And that application of his precepts seems to take a little courage, but it really does work. He says on the average, $5,300 in debt is usually paid off by the individuals taking his class, and about $2,700 is usually saved. And so for $93 what the course cost, I got a lot more money back for my investment. And also it was a good experience just kind of looking at it. And for my age, I kept wishing I had this class, something like it, 30, 40 years ago. and And one of our students was actually a high school student that a parent brought to the class with her, and she made some amazing, insightful changes in her own financial picture and future. So I was encouraged by it.
Okay. Carolyn, you said that Dave Ramsey is a Christian. It is taking place at Brendan's. Is there a religious aspect to this course?
The presentations have a religious aspect, and that might be off-putting to some people, but you don't need to buy the religious message in order to benefit from the program, and nothing is forcefully shoved down anyone's throat. Everything in the program is optional in terms of belief, and there is no expectation that anyone is going to adopt a certain religious viewpoint.
Okay. Michael, I was going to ask you, who would benefit from this class? And it sounds like just about everyone. You said you wish you'd have taken this class, what, 30 years ago or something.
Yeah,
and even a high schooler was in the class. So.
That's right. Yeah, and I was actually making referrals for my clients now. I would say if you haven't had any financial counseling, this would be a good first step if you need it. The other thing is he has a website. It's www.fpu.com, and it's the Financial Peace University website. And you can go on there, and he has a little short video that he talks about how he was at one time in his life not knowing what to do next and financially and really stressed, and he found a way, and now he's sharing it.
Okay. Will you remind us of the details, please, Carolyn, of when it starts and when it goes to and how people can sign up?
It's starting February 7th and running till April 4th. That's Tuesday nights at 7:30 at St. Brendan's Episcopal Church. It's in the Parish Hall, Besser Hall. It will be... You can sign up online, and that's how it's expected to be signed up. So you go online to the website that Michael suggested. I just Google Financial Peace University. I don't like all the W's. you can sign up, and that our people will receive the information that you have signed up, and then when you show up, they'll be ready for you. One thing that people might want to know is that having a partner to come with you is a good thing. So if you're married, you can bring your spouse or your partner. And if you're single, it might be good to find someone who can support you through the process or who also needs to get a handle on their finances, and you can do it together.
Oh, it sounds like it might be nice for teamwork-wise.
It is based on teamwork, and it is good to have someone to work with.
You know, it's interesting. I think a lot of people like to think of financial stability or well-being as something separate from spiritual well-being. Have you found that the two are interlaced or depend on each other?
I do find that people who are in financial distress experience it emotionally and physically and spiritually. And for me, getting out of debt was just the lifting of a burden. And it left me free to really enjoy my life and to have a lot more trust in God and in the world around me. So I do feel there is a spiritual element.
Okay.
And Michael, you could speak to that too, I think.
Well, it's all spiritual in my mind, especially when you think of stewardship and being a good steward with the money and the gifts and the blessings you've been given. And I'm more appreciative. I may not be as good still at being a good steward, but I understand it a little better, and I appreciate the fact that I can give and give more and still be okay. Yeah.
Okay. Carolyn Malseed and Michael Rowcroft, they're here telling us about the Financial Peace University class. It starts February 7th out at St. Brendan's Church in the Valley. Remind us one more time where we can go, Carolyn, for more information.
You can go online and just Google Financial Peace University, and there will be a section that says find a local class, and you just put in your zip code, and it will give you information on classes in the community.
Okay.
Also, you can call Barbara herself at 209-1783.
And she's the presenter,
right,
this class. All right. Thank you so much, Carolyn and Michael, for coming on the show. Anything we're missing?
Yeah. The Cathedral of Nativity is also doing this on Monday nights.
Okay.
And so the Monday before ours will be their first class as well.
I just wanted to mention that we are on the bus line, and unfortunately we cannot provide child care.
Okay. Thanks, you too.
Hey, thank you.
Hard hit pocketbook, empty as my mind. I'm running out of money, but I got loads of time, loads of time. You got money, baby. You got everything. You got everything you need. But you can't always get money back. None. What you got in your pocket, boy? What you hanging on to? You ain't got nothing. There ain't nothing you can do. Nothing you can do now. You got money, baby. You got everything. You got everything. But you can't always get a money back guarantee. Lost in your skyline, hours change to years. Turning money into minutes, I hope your dollars don't turn to tears. Don't turn to tears now. But you got money. You got everything. You got everything you need. But you can't always get a money back.
For the KTOO and Tackle Fisheries Seafood Festival on January 28th at Centennial Hall. 8 restaurants will be serving more than a dozen halibut, salmon, and rockfish dishes to choose from. Live music, a silent auction, and desserts by Copa, Glacial Grinds, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company make this an extraordinary night out in support of KTOO. Tickets at ktoo.org. The Seafood Festival is brought to you by KTOO with sponsorship support from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 24th. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio is Kelly Manning. She's the director of the Canvas, and also Chris Taylor. He's a teacher at UAS and also will be showing at the Canvas starting next first Friday. Welcome to the show, Kelly and Chris.
Thanks,
guys. Hi.
Yeah, nice to have you here. Kelly, do you want to start with the fundraising dinner on February 4th?
Yes, absolutely. We're excited. This has been an annual event as long as the Canvas has been open. We always do a seated dinner, bring people into the Canvas. It's really fun. We are going to be doing this on Saturday, February 4th, 6 to 9 p.m. The Sandpiper Cafe is sponsoring the dinner. Chef Joe Manning will be preparing a Moroccan-inspired chicken dinner. It sounds amazing. And so we're going to have a really great dinner. We're going to have music by George Gress. He's going to be playing guitar, and we're looking forward to that. We're going to have lots of great items in a silent auction. We're already getting really wonderful items from the hangar. We've gotten a couple of tours from like the Zipline Company. We've got great art. We'll always have some art from canvas artists, community artists. So we've got some great art items. Miranda McCarty brought some jewelry by that she made, handmade. We're going to have a really wonderful silent auction, beautiful dinner. We have our ceramic studio manager has made plates that have a canvas artist design decal on them, and those will be yours to keep at the end of the evening. So it's a really fun event.
Excellent. I want to get back to that in a minute. Again, that's Saturday, February 4th at the Canvas, and that must mean that February 3rd is First Friday.
Yes, that's correct.
When your show opens.
Yes.
And it's all Moroccan-inspired food.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
To pair with the dinner, right?
Yep. Kind of match the art with the food.
No. But you're an accomplished artist, Chris. Tell us about what you make.
This show that I'll be doing is titled Lying Low. I'm notoriously a slow creator. In part, due to the process that I make my work, I do a lot of layers with oil. I also spend a lot of time contemplating the direction of a piece before I attack it and do another layer. And I used to find this pretty frustrating, but lately I've been kind of embracing it and kind of going with it. And I noticed that in between working on the bigger pieces, I tend to do a lot of smaller works, and it kind of helps me dial in my current aesthetic. So that being said, I have a big body of work going that's about 6 to 8 months out, but I've been doing a lot of work in between that. So the show will be kind of referencing the title, Lying Low, and about the pieces that I do in between the bigger pieces. So the show will have about 12 pieces, three massive oil paintings, two I had shipped up that were part of my last show. Then I'll have about eight charcoal drawings, figurative, abstract, and some still lifes as well that are kind of abstracted. And then I'll have one piece that is just finishing up now. I still have a couple brush strokes to do on it. But it's this piece I've been working on for about 6 years over the course of the last few series. So it's kind of an interesting piece.
Well, it seems like it's sort of a trend these days, right? Slow food. Mm-hmm. Somebody gave me a book the other day called The Art of Slow Writing. Sounds like you are working on slow art.
Exactly, yeah.
Seems like everybody's trying to slow down and be a little more present.
I think that's it, yeah. It feels right. So,
Kelly, if you had to describe what his pieces are like, how would you do that?
I've spent a lot of time around Chris's work over the years, and I would say some things I would really describe, I think they're really urban. They have a lot of this sort of city feel to them that is really present, I think, across his work. I think that you can definitely see in the works that he's going to be showing the illustration background that he has. He brings this sort of line work that really blends in with the painting work in a really interesting way. And so there's a really great play on lineation in his work, which I think is really interesting, and really vibrant colors in the paintings so that I think will really appeal to people. So people that have seen, because he showed at the Canvas 5 years ago,
yeah.
6 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
And so I think that they'll see the threads, but also the new direction that he's exploring as well. So that's really interesting always to see with an artist.
Okay, so that's February 3rd is when that show opens.
Correct.
First Friday, right? Among putting up shows, tell us what if people the next day go to the fundraiser, what does their money support at the Canvas?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the things for sure is supporting community artists, and I think that's really important and probably something that we don't talk about enough that we do. We really support community artists. We support the opportunity for people to teach, for people to share their work with the community, for people that want to develop their skills, that there's a space for that learning. Definitely a big piece we always want to make sure people understand is that our goal is to create that inclusion and those opportunities for artists with disabilities to be a part of the broader community. So that's a place that that money really goes toward helping, allowing us to create those opportunities to buy the materials and do the promotion and help connect those artists that aren't as able to maybe do that on their own, to have that access, and because the work that they do is definitely worthy of being part of the arts community and worthy of being part of the arts discussion in the community. And so that's our goal, is really to create a space that's open for people of all ability levels, whether they're just starting out and want to learn something, or they have years of experience and want to build on their practice, or they're at the level of Chris where they have a practice that they do independently but need a place to bring it to the community. So we really try to touch on that scope. So the fundraising goes towards being able to pay contract teachers, buy art materials, promote the opportunities that we have going on, have that big, beautiful space right in downtown that that's access to that and accessibility to a big studio where people can come and work.
Okay. Chris Taylor's show, Laying Low, goes up February 3rd on First Friday at the Canvas. And the next day is the Canvas fundraiser dinner sponsored by the Sandpiper. What time does that start again?
Starts at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah, just a really quick, a couple other sponsors. We've got the Alaskan Brewing is sponsoring, as well as Duck Creek Market and the Sandpiper. So, yeah,
great
sponsors.
For more info, where should people go?
Definitely check us out on our website, canvasarts.org, or you can give us a call at 586-1750 for more info.
Great. Kelly and Chris, thank you so much for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Anytime.
This is Bird Note. A pileated woodpecker breaks the silence on a winter morning in South Florida's Corkscrew Swamp, a mixture of cypress swamp and pineland. This National Audubon Society sanctuary is birdy any time of the year, but in winter, it comes alive with migratory songbirds. On a warm, sunny morning, birds are active all around us, from the tops of the tall cypresses to the shrubs along the boardwalk. There's a blue-gray gnatcatcher foraging in a willow. It has flown to Corkscrew from a similar swamp in Georgia. Higher up, in a cypress, a northern parula, resplendent in blue, auburn, and gold, calls repeatedly. It may have come from the same Georgia swamp. An eastern phoebe calls from a dead branch over the water. The phoebe has made a longer flight from its nest site on a Pennsylvania stream. Another small bird moves through the undergrowth, wagging its tail as it hops from branch to branch. It's a palm warbler, all the way from Ontario, to spend the winter in a place where insects are common and there's no chance of snow. The 14,000-acre Corkscrew Swamp Sanctuary was set aside in the 1950s. Today, many birds find the habitats they need there. To learn more, begin at birdnote.org.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, January 24th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 10 minutes till the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is Dylan Rice and Lydia Smith. They are part of the cast of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum opening at JDHS this weekend. Welcome to the show, Dylan and Lydia.
Thank you.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, nice to have you here. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum. Either of you, tell us about it.
Okay. Yes, so it is a play within a play. We are streetgoers on Scotland, and then Dylan's character comes and gets everyone on the street to put on this play, which is set in Roman time. And it's a musical comedy. It's very funny. So many twists and turns.
All right. Dylan, tell us about your character.
So Pseudolus is kind of seen as like the director of the entire thing, because he puts on this play and he's like, you're going to be this role and you're going to be this role and I'm going to be this role, which is the lead. And so it's very fun. It's very vaudevillian. when you first look at the play, you're like, well, it's just kind of comedy, but we kind of threw in a real message to the play. And that's why I like it so much, is there's an actual message involved instead of it just being fun, which everyone loves fun. But the message is what gets me.
Okay. Now, I know Michaela Moore, she teaches theater and helps you all produce these kind of shows. Did you work with her to figure out that you wanted to do this show, or how does that selection process work?
So last year, when we were thinking of plays to do, we Lydia's idea was The Addams Family, because she really liked The Addams Family, which we ended up doing in the fall. And we were going to take that one and do that one in Scotland, and we asked the people who own the rights to the play if we could cut it short, because it needs to be an hour and 30 minutes long, and The Addams Family was like a two-hour long play, and they said no. So we had to come up with something else. And so Mrs. Moore's daughter, Shania, actually suggested A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and she read through it, and she loved it. And she was like, this is what we're doing for Scotland. It's set. Mm-hmm. It's done. We're doing it. And we were like, okay. And so she was the main factor. Like, she put an input, and, like, if I knew plays, I could have put an input, but I didn't, so.
And, Lydia, remind us how Scotland comes into all of this.
Yes, so we have been nominated to perform in Scotland for a fringe festival that is international. People from all over the world come there to perform, so it's very exciting. And if you come to the place, you can help us get there, raising the money and everything. Ooh. And this is the show that we are taking to Scotland, so you'll get to see it first.
Okay. Let's see. If somebody hasn't seen A Funny Thing Happen on the Way to the Forum, can one of you give us a highlight, maybe, or maybe one of your funniest parts from it?
That is interesting, picking one thing, because there's definitely very many crazy things that happen in it.
Yes. Or maybe a thread that you enjoy the most.
Well, for me, I personally enjoy Miles Gloriosus' song, and that role is played by Matthew Woodland, and he's very, very, very full of himself, and he comes on and he says, stand aside, everyone, I take large steps, and he goes on this giant rant about him wanting his bride that he purchased, which is a main component of the play, and he's it's a very interesting character. I very much like it.
And Lydia, what's been sort of your favorite part of the play, or maybe even what have you taken away from the play? What has it taught you?
Well, this play has actually been different than what we've done before, because Dylan and I have helped in co-directing it, kind of, and just, like, assisting. And I've done the choreography for it, and so we put lots of different factors into it. So this show is very close to my heart, and, you know, it's the first show that we really, really got to work on.
Okay. Sounds like a lot of fun, and it opens this Friday. Tell us about those details,
please. Yes, so
this Friday at 7, and then also Saturday at 7. And we are also performing next weekend with the Friday show at 7 and a Saturday show at 2 and 7.
7, yes. Matinee on Saturday.
Excellent. And when's Scotland again?
So we will leave for Scotland August 28th this summer. And we will be over there for 2 weeks, and we will come back maybe in time for school. Probably not, but
we might miss like the first week.
So what year are you, Tom?
I'm a senior.
Yeah, and I'm a junior, so I will.
It won't
affect
me. But.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum opens this Friday at 7 p.m. at JDHS. We've been speaking with Dylan Rice and Lydia Smith. Help the JDHS theater team get to Scotland by watching this play. Sounds like a win-win. Dylan and Lydia, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
No problem.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon. It's currently 40 degrees here in the capital city, and the forecast for tonight calls for rain with lows around 38, chance of precip 100%, and tomorrow rain before noon, then showers afternoon, highs near 40, southeast winds to around 20 miles per hour, and the chance of precip tomorrow is 90%. Going into Thursday, rain, high near 39, southeast wind 20 to 25 miles per hour, where the chance of precip is back to 100%. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno afternoon.